On this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio, in our news segments, we've got real news about fake news at the Houston Chronicle. We'll also touch on a Houston politician who's turning himself into jail this week. We talked to Mark Pulliam about a grassroots effort he's leading to stop the insanity at UT and how listeners can get involved. And Michael Quinn Sullivan will close us out with this week's commentary about who's really in charge in the Texas House and whether he'll stay in charge. Coming to you from the 1836 studios, this is Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. You can follow me on Twitter at TweetTonyMac. You can find us on the internet, www.texasscorecard.com, also EmpowerTexans.com. If you're listening on the radio, this show goes out as a podcast as well, so you can make sure you never miss a show by going to iTunes, Google Play, or SoundCloud and subscribing. If you already subscribe to the podcast, go in there and leave us a nice review. Contrary to popular belief, I like compliments, and it also helps us raise the visibility level of the show for new listeners to find us. With all that out of the way, I wanted to get started with this week's top news story. For that, I've got Carrie Cheshire in the studio. Fake news Houston Chronicle being found out as fake news.
That's right, Tony. Mike Ward, the longtime Austin Bureau, Capital Bureau Chief for the Houston Chronicle, out at the newspaper after another reporter there talked to the editors about errors and probably flat-out lies in his reporting.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that draws me into the work that I do, I know for you, draws you into the work you do, writing about things that go on in state and local politics, is real news, service of the people. We're creating these new entities like Texas Scorecard Radio, like Texas Scorecard, that go out to actually give people real news, because there is, as our president says so often, so much fake news out there. Here's a guy who's literally making up sources, making up the news, and has been doing it, apparently, for a very long time.
Well, that's right, Tony. And I think when President Trump talks about the fake news, what people need to realize is that the fake news is part of the swamp. In both Austin and in Washington, you have these traditional, established media empires that exist to rub shoulders with politicians and play games with them and explain away their positions. And here with Mike Ward, a fixture of the Austin establishment for over two decades, found out for completely fabricating quotes in his stories. I mean, Tony, we were talking earlier, this says that he started with preconceived notions,
sure,
and then was having to invent quotes to make them up, rather than simply reporting what was happening and letting citizens decide.
Yeah, I think this one's going to blow. You know, this one's blowing up because he's lazy. You know, he was lazy, apparently lazy, in making up these fake quotes. But it actually goes to a symptom of fake news that we have reporters out there with an agenda and with a message that they say, well, this is what I'm going to drive. These are the facts, and then I'm going to go see if I can find quotes or facts to kind of fit into this. That's the philosophy mentality out there. And here's a guy who just took it the step further, apparently, and just said, well, I'll just make up those people. I'll make up that quote.
That's absolutely right, Tony. It showed that, you know, not only was he pushing a perceived narrative, but he didn't even want to do the legwork to go find the people to say, yeah, I agree, Mike, let's talk about this.
Yeah, very, very interesting. So Houston Chronicle admits this in their newspaper and says, we're going to do an investigation, very thorough investigation, supposedly. But there's kind of doubt about that, given that they kind of downplayed the role he played for the newspaper. I mean, this is a guy with a management position, not just some reporter on the street.
Right. He's got a management position with the paper, managing its Austin bureau, reporting on capital affairs. He's presumably got a number of people who report to him, who view him not only as a leader, on the hierarchy sheet, but see him as a leader in terms of what you should do as a journalist. And if this is the kind of example that he's setting, the question is, who else is lying at the Houston Chronicle? Who else has been making up sources? And then beyond that, you know, they're already seeking to delegitimize him as just calling him a reporter. No. This is a guy on your editorial board.
Yeah, this is a major player at the newspaper. I think it's really interesting. It will be kind of up to, I think, certainly if somebody's a reader of the Houston Chronicle, to demand accountability and say, we want a full investigation of this stuff. People need to come clean about what's involved, and it needs to be addressed. They need to raise their standards.
Well, that's right, Tony. We found time and time again there's a real market for real news. news out there. If you're listening here on Texas Scorecard Radio, that's because you want to know and you want to care. And it's sad to see so many institutions decide to, you know, really give the middle finger to their readers like the Houston Chronicle.
Yeah, it's really a shame. And, we can replace those bad institutions, but those institutions need a reform. Appreciate your reporting on it, Kerry.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tony.
All right, now let's go to Charles Blaine down in the Bayou City, or H-Town, as they sometimes call it. A local politician turning himself into jail. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's crazy. So local state rep here from Missouri City, Ron Reynolds, Democratic state rep, he turned himself into jail to begin his year-long sentence. He was charged and found convicted of, and it was sentenced for barratry, known as ambulance.
Yeah, basically he was out there soliciting clients. He's a trial lawyer and breaking the rules for attorneys in terms of soliciting clients, and got caught for it. Got sentenced, and this thing's been an appeal. So they've dropped the appeals. He's turned himself into jail. I guess the big question is he going to be in jail? If a year-long sentence, is he going to be in jail when the legislature meets in the spring?
Right. So, yeah, so that you said he dropped the appeal, and he said he did that because he wanted to prepare for the session. And what he meant by that is he hopes that he can get off early using good time credit to get out. And the district attorney's office said that could happen as well. The sheriff may have him serve kind of a day-for-day thing and give him a little time off so he can make it to the legislature.
Yeah, there were some interesting questions about this. People saying, well, does he get escorted out of jail to go to the legislature? I ended up doing some research on this. Comes all the way from Parliament. It's in the U.S. Constitution. It's in the state constitution. This privilege from arrest for public officials. But really, the privilege is kind of consumed. If they're arrested for a crime, that's okay. And there's nothing stopping them. So he won't get out on account of being an elected official. But as you're saying, I think he may actually be able to get out because of, you know, good behavior, just the programs that exist in these county jails.
Yeah, that's what he's hoping so. And they said, the district attorney's office said that it could be 2 or 3 days before the start of the session. So as long as he stays on his best behavior, I think he's hoping to be able to make it and not be shackled for this upcoming session.
Yeah, really interesting. You know, Carlos Uresti, a state senator in San Antonio, recently convicted of several different crimes and sentenced to federal pen for, I believe, 12 years. In federal pen, they serve that day for day. Every day of the sentence, but in county jail, a little bit of a different situation. A lot of times they get basically 3 days for every day, assuming they play the cards right.
Right. And what's funny, as you mentioned, is another Democrat elected official, right? So the state party came out, the executive director said, of the Ron Reynolds case that, you know, at least he's owning up to what he did. And he's, you know, trying to just take ownership of it rather than saying what it is. And that one of their officials, actually two of their officials now, and possibly more, are convicted criminals.
Yeah. Well, in Reynolds' case, misdemeanor, so he's not disqualified from office. I guess that's one perspective on it, and it seems to be flying with his Democrat voters who have chosen to reelect him. And assuming they reelect him here in November. So we will see what happens, but I tend to expect that Mr. Reynolds will be back in the legislature approximately on time, fresh from a stint in county jail.
Right, and I think so too. He doesn't have a November challenger, but I can say one thing, that his constituents aren't getting the best representation, that's for sure.
That's right. Well, appreciate your reporting on it, Charles.
Thank you.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's my pleasure to welcome on the program this week Mark Pulliam, author at Misrule of Law. Mark, good to have you this week. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, good morning, Tony. I'm pleased to be here.
Yeah, we've had you on to talk about some legal things, and it's funny, you've got some good articles out just this week on some, you know, I could talk about three or four different topics with you. I'd encourage listeners to go to your website, Ms. Rule of Law. But I wanted to have you on to talk about a new project you're doing, a Facebook group called Stop the Insanity at UT. And I think it's something that people of Texas, taxpayers, particularly UT alums, need to hear about. So tell us a little bit about it. What prompted you? What's the insanity, and what are you trying to stop? What are you trying to do to stop it?
Well, first of all, Tony, I want to make it clear that I'm not some kind of a disgruntled person with an agenda. I attended the University of Texas Law School. My son graduated from the McCombs Business School at UT a couple of years ago. And I love the University of Texas. And the reason that I became concerned about this is not because I have an axe to grind, but because I want to save the university that I hold so dear.
That's right.
And I've been writing over the last several years in a variety of publications, City Journal, American Greatness, The American Spectator, among other places, about things that are happening at UT that unfortunately very few alumni and even our elected officials seem to be following. It's sort of inside baseball. And even though I've been writing about this and it's attracted some attention, particularly outside of Texas, because a lot of people think, how could that be happening in Texas? Texas is such a conservative state. It hasn't really caught on where it needs to catch on, which is among UT alumni and the legislature, which regulates and authorizes the funding of the university.
Yeah.
A lot of alumni, all they care about is, is UT going to have a good team this year? Are they going to make it to the bowls, et cetera? So I did what seems to be the thing to do. I decided to start a social media campaign. So I set up this Facebook page, Stop the Insanity at UT, with the idea of attracting as many people as I can. I collect on this page the articles that I've written and that other people have written. And UT is attracting the attention of a lot of these higher education reform groups like College Fix, Campus Reform, Minding the Campus, et cetera. And to put in one place all of these articles so that if anybody is concerned about UT, they could go there and have it as a resource. And then I put on the page as well information about if you are concerned about this, how to contact the Board of Regents, how to contact the governor, et cetera, so that we can start to empower this sense of dissatisfaction that many people have about the direction of UT.
Yeah. Well, you know, like you, Mark, you know, I'm an alumni of UT, and it's been interesting. You know, I arrived on campus in 2005, and Larry Faulkner at that time was the president. Bill Powers came in maybe 2006, shortly into the time I was on campus. And the campus was transformed over the last decade, and it seems to be getting even worse under Power's successor, Greg Fenves. You seem to have a real problem here. Can you describe for listeners, let's talk a little bit about what's going on the campus today, even over the last year or two, that really is kind of shocking.
Well, but I'll do that, Tony, but you're exactly right. A lot of people, and I walked across the stage and got my law degree in 1980, and you walked across the stage and got your law degree quite a bit of time after that. But a lot of people who graduated from UT assume that the school is the same now as it was when they got their degree, and that simply isn't true.
Right.
So we saw under Bill Powers, and now it has accelerated since Greg Fenves became president in 2015, a combination of factors. One is a cronyism that has crept in, which spawned the preferential admissions program and this corrupt non-forgivable loan program.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to note, you know, as some people may be aware of UT Regent Wallace Hall, who was investigating admissions favoritism at the university, where essentially, particularly at the law school, they were handing out admission slots to students who were underqualified because they were politically connected. I mean, to the tune of bottom 1% admittees to the law school, somebody who scored in the, you know, the absolute, basically a zero on the law school admissions test, getting into the law school. And all
people,
of that.
The people who are so unqualified that they were never able to pass the bar exam.
Correct.
Like Jim Pitts's son.
Yeah.
And the people that were getting this preferential treatment were people who hold high-ranking appropriations positions in the legislature.
Yeah, what's amazing and people don't realize is Hall fought a great battle over that, did a lot of great work to expose it, and you would have assumed, oh, well, there would be reform. There wasn't reform. The Regents codified those rules and said, well, we're going to continue to do this favoritism, and now it's got an official sanction from the Regents. It's mind-boggling.
And the first thing that Bill McRaven did when he took over as chancellor was to bury this whole thing and to make sure that it never saw the light of day.
That's right.
Well, that was a shameful episode, and that's what really got my attention a few years ago when this Wallace Hall stuff was bubbling up. And I'm thinking, what could possibly be going on here? And it kind of curled my hair once I got into it. But the sad thing is, since Bill Powers was forced to resign after the Kroll report found that he basically lied and tried to cover up this backdoor admissions process, he was replaced by Greg Fenves, our current president, in 2015. And Greg Fenves, who got his degrees at the University of California at Berkeley and who taught there for 20 years, is trying to transform UT into an even more progressive version of UC Berkeley. And just to give a highlight of a few of the things that he's done.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about some of these, some of the things that Fenves has done since he's been in, because it's really startling.
Well, he's cleansed the campus of statuary, some of which has been there for 80 years, on the grounds that it's offensive to some people. And this is not all of Confederate era figures. He removed one statue of a former Texas governor who served after the Civil War, had no connection to the Civil War.
Yeah, Governor Hogg.
He's just rewriting history. He has greatly increased the African and African diaspora studies department and put the whole moral authority of the university behind it, including recognizing Angela Davis when she came to UT to speak at a Black Studies conference. Angela Davis ran for vice president twice on the Communist Party ticket.
Wasn't she one of these kind of 60s era terrorists?
She provided the guns in a courtroom breakout in which the judge was killed. And she was on the FBI most wanted list, and unaccountably she was acquitted by a jury in Oakland. But her culpability, I think, is clear in the eyes of history. But Fenves has also greatly expanded the diversity and inclusion bureaucracy, and many alumni are unaware that there's nearly 100 people in the Department of Diversity and Community Engagement,
some of these very high-paid. Saurabh Sharma, our intern over the summer, was writing a little bit about this, that the diversity department there, these are some, you know, people making $200,000-$300,000 a year, and these aren't even necessarily the heads. These are junior diversity czars there at the university who are highly paid positions. That, you know, the funny thing is, you took that money and gave it to scholarships for low income kids. They accomplish a heck of a lot more of the stated objective, but of course, the stated objective isn't the real objective. The real objective is, you know, left wing activism.
Exactly. And they're paying these bureaucrats more than almost all faculty get paid. The only faculty who get paid anywhere close to this are like Nobel Prize winners. So we have a social justice agenda that permeates all of the academic departments in the curriculum at UT. We have systematic indoctrination, this masculine UT
program. Yeah, this got a little bit of attention, but it was this PR campaign of basically trying to tell, I guess, young men at the university, we need to redefine masculinity to be... And in one case, it was like more than one case, it was actually women. These women, this is being these kind of left-wing women is what masculinity is now to the University of Texas in 2018.
Well, the idea that in Texas that masculinity could be considered inherently toxic, and the way you fix it is by encouraging male students to become more effeminate, is just outrage.
Yeah, but so it was just ridiculous.
Fortunately, it attracted the attention of Rush Limbaugh. He talked about it on his show. And with a little bit of publicity, they had to back off of this, that sunlight is the best disinfectant. There are some less known programs like the Institute for Urban Policy Research and Analysis that is basically a taxpayer-funded group that generates liberal op-eds critical of our Republican elected officials. And so all this is happening. We have a Title IX.
So what? Let me. You know, we're going to run out of time. We could probably go on for an hour talking about the craziness there. And I'd encourage folks to go to your group and kind of learn a little more about that. What can people do? What are the action steps that you're hoping to lead people towards to change this?
Well, first is they need to go to Stop the Insanity at UT Facebook page. They need to, you know, become familiar with the details of what all is going on, that this is not just alarmism. This is real. And then they need to stop writing checks to their alma mater until things change. And I provided the contact information on the Facebook page. They need to let their elected officials know how unhappy they are with this situation, and especially the governor. Governor Greg Abbott appoints the Board of Regents, who are supposed to be in charge of overseeing the university. And I've even provided the names of the individual members of the Board of Regents so that they can contact these people and express their disapproval. Yeah. Another thing is, if UT alumni belong to the Texas Exus, they should let Texas Exus know that they are sick and tired of their alumni group serving as a cheerleader for the administration, particularly when the administration is doing things that are contrary to the interests of the alumni and, in my opinion, degrading the reputation of the university.
Yeah, which, I mean, I think our degrees really are truly being degraded by, you know, our degrees are associated with what people historically recall of UT. And over time, that's going to be diminished if these left-wing radical plans are successful. I think I'm running out of time. Thank you, Mark, for joining us. I tell listeners, absolutely go Stop the Insanity at UT on Facebook. Godspeed on this. I think it's an important project, and I really hope that you can capture the attention of alumni who can get involved and do something to stop this craziness.
Well, I appreciate that, Tony.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers Program? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There, you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials in order to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearer logo on it. As a promo, we gave away a beautiful custom-engraved Glock handgun. Sign up today at texastorchbearers.com. That's texastorchbearers with an S.com.
We all know that in politics, there's power behind the throne. This week's commentary touches on Gordon Johnson, the Democrat political consultant who is the power behind outgoing Texas House Speaker Joe Strauss. Michael Quinn Sullivan asks whether Johnson will be able to remain in power once a new speaker is elected in January.
To the chagrin of the Austin establishment, Texans know who Joe Strauss is. He's the disgraced outgoing speaker of the Texas House. Strauss has been the face of a coalition of Democrats, crony Republicans, and lobbyists working to thwart the reform agendas of conservatives. But the dirty little secret is that Strauss really wasn't the guy in charge. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. We're all used to hearing about the so-called power behind the throne. This isn't a new concept. In old monarchies, the kings were usually dullards controlled by more conniving self-servers. Even the meritocracies of democratic republics, we find that presidents and prime ministers have a retinue of advisors who hold significant sway. Think of George Bush's Karl Rove and Barack Obama's Rahm Emanuel. The man running the Texas House hasn't been Joe Strauss. It's been the Strauss family's longtime Austin-based Democrat political consultant and lobbyist, Gordon Johnson. For decades, the Johnson family business has been manipulating the business of the state. The patriarch, Robert Johnson, was a Democrat lawmaker, parliamentarian, and later a lobbyist. He and his sons accumulated their wealth by manipulating government. They're now involved heavily in dog racing and other gambling interests as well. When Republicans took power of the Texas House in 2002, the Johnson family was likewise swept from power and their family lobby business was threatened. So Gordon Johnson set about creating a new coalition of self-serving Republicans to augment his base of liberal Democrats. The result was a coup in 2009 that removed Republican Tom Craddock and installed Strauss as the speaker. The coup re-energized the Johnson family business. Strauss was never known to be particularly engaged intellectually as a legislator or as speaker. For years, lawmakers say that the official speaker's office staff would send them to Johnson's downtown Austin office for discussions that would historically be held with the speaker. It was Johnson, not Strauss, who made the committee assignments, picked which bills would get a vote, and generally ran the House. And given his Democrat leanings, it should come as no surprise that Johnson apparently holds special animus for former Governor Rick Perry and current Governor Greg Abbott and orchestrated opposition to their legislative agendas. It was Johnson during the last legislative session who saw that Greg Abbott's agenda was under constant assault in the House. But the tide's been turning. Even the less outspokenly conservative Republican lawmakers have chafed under Gordon Johnson's heavy hand. In fact, even some Democrats have complained about having an outsider tell them what to do. That frustration, coupled with a move in recent years by GOP activists to have the speaker selected in the Republican Party caucus, saw Strauss's hold on the speakership beginning to wane. Johnson tried to organize opposition to a formal rule change empowering the caucus. Tried and failed. As a result, Strauss announced his departure from politics. He knew he could not win a fair fight. That decision by the caucus was further ratified in the March 2018 primary. There you saw 1,282,385 Republican voters out of 1.5 million say they want the speaker to be selected by the Republicans without Democrat interference. In a desperate attempt to cling to power, Gordon Johnson is throwing all his remaining GOP sycophants into the fray, hoping they can keep the Strauss coalition together. State Representatives For Price, John Zerwas, Travis Clardy, and Drew Darby are all declared speaker candidates operating from Johnson's playbook of actively courting Democrats to undermine the GOP majority. Johnson wants to keep hiding in the shadows as an unseen puppet master over the House, thwarting Governor Abbott and attacking conservative reforms. Whether or not the Texas House GOP keeps the shadowy Gordon Johnson in power will be decided when the Republican caucus meets after the November general election to nominate the next House Speaker. With the Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's the end of the program. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. You can also go to TexasScorecard.com to subscribe to our print publication. Thanks for listening, and join us back here next week.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.